Welcome to Eyes and Lows, the podcast where we shine a light on mental health in the blind, low vision, and print and peer community, bringing in experts, real stories, valuable insight, and meaningful conversation, and everything in between. Join us as we explore more deeply and freely the eyes and lows of a wide range of abilities, navigating life after diagnosis, and building resilience. We have with us today Dennis Darnes. He is a certified peer specialist. He facilitates several small groups and does great things for his community. Welcome, Dennis. We are so thrilled to have you here with us today. Why don't you introduce yourself and let everyone know a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Thank you, Dr. McLemore. My name is Dennis Darnes. I am a United States Marine Corps veteran and a member of the VVA. What I do is I am a certified peer specialist. I'm a whole health wellness coach. I also am a trauma-informed care certified, and I facilitate groups for men that are dealing with blindness for the Center for the Visually Impaired, a nonprofit organization that's in Midtown, Atlanta here. So I do that. I'm married, and I have a lovely wife named Jeanette, and also I just been celebrating 2 years in marriage.
Wow, so congratulations.
This month, on the 4th, you know.
Congratulations, happy anniversary.
Yes, and also I'm in recovery also from addictions and also mental health. That's just a little about myself right there.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing. So why don't you tell us, how did you first get involved with your peer specialist certification and dealing with individuals with blindness and addiction?
Yes, well, first of all, it happened in 2008. I was diagnosed with open-end glaucoma. That's a disease of the optic nerves where the pressure's on your eyes and your vision become blurred. You have low depth perception. You're susceptible to light. And what that means is that if I'm going downstairs or climbing stairs, I can't tell where the stairs end and where the stairs start. And then when I'm looking at traffic in the street, I can't tell how fast the cars are coming towards me. Mm. So it was difficult for me to cross the street. You know, at that time when I was diagnosed, I was going to America's Best. And I was going to get some glasses because I had issues like reading the paper and things of that nature. And a optometrist told me, say, hey, you need to go to an ophthalmologist because we've seen something in your eyes that these glasses can't help you. Mm. So I said, really? So I said, oh. So I went to an ophthalmologist, and the next thing they know, they say, yeah, you have a diagnosis of glaucoma, and it's chronic, right? I was like, okay, so you need to take these drops and come to us like every 3 months for an examination. So we look up your optic nerve in the back of your eye. And so glaucoma is like a disease that is more prevalent in the African-American community and the Hispanic community, and sometimes it's hereditary. So it's one of the most well-known diseases of sight loss in the world. So when I did that, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was like, I'm a chef. So I was working in a restaurant in Stone Mountain, and I was ordering food. I was a supervisor for the restaurant, and I was trainer for the people to come in and stuff like that. So I was going to the dry storage and in the freezer and the walk-in and all the products and things of that nature. It was hard for me to read what was in it and what was on it. So I was like, oh man, you know, so I was like traumatized by that, right? I was cooking food for customers, and I read the ticket, and at the bottom of the ticket, it had something else on it because of my peripheral vision and depth perception. But I look at the top of the ticket, I couldn't see what was down at the bottom. And then the person say, oh, we had French fries at the bottom down there. And I was like, oh man, that's another 15 minutes. The customers got to wait. So, you know, that was sort of stressful and anxiety for me working in food service at that time. So I happened to meet somebody at the train station in Atlanta, and I was talking to him, and, you know, I told him about my situation, and he said, they have a Center for the Visually Impaired. I was like, what is that? He said, that's where blind people go and take training and learn daily activities and take white cane training, computer training, training on the iPhone and things of that nature, sensitivity training. So I was like, okay. So I went there and I met the group, right? They had a group that meets every Thursday. So I went there and one of the adult managers for the program, and she gave me a list of four things to do, right? She said, first of all, you need a letter from the doctor saying that you have a legal blindness and take that to the transit system so you can be able to travel all over the city for $4 one way and $4 the other way. And you could ride the big train and the big bus for free, right? So then she told me to go to the Georgia Vocational Rehab where they teach you if you want to go back to work and you still was able to work and that's what you wanted, they would pay for your training. They would send you to school and things of that nature. So I got a counselor. I went there. I did that. I went and took the assessment at the Georgia Vocational Rehab, which is part of the Georgia Department of Labor. So I went there and I took my letter to the mobility place and got my mobility ticket ID. So I went there. Then I talked to my counselor. I said that I didn't want to be a chef anymore, right? Because that was too stressful. And so I say, I wanted to do something else. And so during that time when I was losing my sight and I had lost my job, I started drinking and I started like staying at home and doing other things. And I wouldn't go out. I was afraid to leave the house. I couldn't read the paper. I couldn't recognize people. I couldn't change the TV channel. All of this was real stressful for me, right? And I was like, man, you know, I was like, I crossed a two-lane highway. I couldn't tell whether the traffic light was red, yellow, or green, right? I didn't know how to cross the street. So I was afraid to leave the house. I didn't go anywhere. And I couldn't read papers. I couldn't read books. You know, I was really stressed out, a lot of anxiety. I couldn't go grocery shopping. I couldn't recognize foods in the store and things of that nature. I didn't know how to do all of this stuff, right? So I went to the Vision Impaired Center for the Vision Impaired, and they taught me how to live my life as a blind person, right? Mm. And I went to support groups there, and I met some people there that had the same disease or they had the same shared interest or way of life that I had to support me. So I took some of their suggestions. I took the training and I told my counselor I wanted to be a certified peer specialist. And what a certified peer specialist is a person that has lived experience with addictions and mental health issues that's in recovery, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was going through that, I learned to have tools that I could use to help me with my anxiety, with my depression, and also with my addiction, you know, that I got somewhere with some people that I connected with that showed me some suggestions to have a new way of life, right? They told me that even though I was blind, that was just an experience I was going through. That wasn't me. My addiction wasn't me. And I found out that through that I was still a human being. I thought I was less than a man, you know, at that time, you know, especially about dating, going to movies, going to restaurants, going to the ballet, going to different venues like sports arenas, to the Falcons game, to the Hawks game, you know, going to doing that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't navigate those venues. And I couldn't see what was happening on the floor, right. You know, on the stage, right? So I was like, you know, I can't have fun anymore, right? You know, and so I got depressed, you know. And then they told me, say, Dennis, that you can't control your past or you can't control your future. You only control your present situation or where you're at, you know. And I had to do something about that when I was trying to learn how to operate a telephone, right? Trying to operate how to call somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see the screen, so I had to use
the voice.
VoiceOver. Mm-hmm. I had to use Apple products and like that, or Siri, to tell them to call them. And I put people in my contacts. I didn't know how to do that. Then the keyboard has to talk to me. When I go to the keyboard, when I put my finger on the keyboard, it'll tell me what letter it is. Mm-hmm. And then I just take my hand off that letter, and then I can put that person's name in. Then I'll be swiping left and swiping right. And I'll be swiping this and swiping that.
Yeah.
And so they sent me to training at the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network. And they certified me as a certified peer specialist for the state of Georgia. I took my training in Columbus, Georgia. The Georgia Voc Rehab, they paid for that. They paid for my travel down there. They paid for my food. They paid for my hotel stay, all of that. And when I got there, it was a great experience. I met some great people that connected with me, that showed me a new way to live, you know. Even though I was blind, I told the instructor that, and they gave me the audio format for the training.
Oh.
They had never trained a blind person for that program.
Oh, wow.
So I was the first person that they trained for that program, right? Mm. So I was like, okay, what do you need? Because I had took a little training. I was new to that too, right? Because I had been trained for 2 years, you know, accessibility and working for text to speech on a computer, doing Microsoft 365 and Windows 10. So it was a lot of fear for me trying something new at age 57, right? When I lost my sight, so to speak, some of my sight, and trying to find something new to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. McElmore, it was a lot of fear for me to get in that water again like that, right? But I had a good support team of people in the training and the staff at the network that were training me, right?
Right.
Because I went there, and what I did was I interviewed them first, right? I told them about myself, and they told me to say, oh, yeah, we want you to be a part of the program, Dennis. So I said, okay. So when you fill the application out, just let us know. You know, we'll put your name at the top of the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, completed the training, a lot of fear. Now I had to pass the certification like a month later, right? It was like in August, so like in September of 2016. So they didn't really know how to access it, make this test accessible for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was they had a volunteer, and what he did was he read every question on the test,
mm-hmm.
and I gave him my answer.
Okay.
So he wrote it down for me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think, yes, he wrote it down for me, and he told me to explain something to him, and he recorded it,
mm-hmm.
and then I had to go in front of a panel of four people. They asked me all kind of questions about my training, about the certification for a peer specialist, and I passed it on the first try.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I was so proud of myself for doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was an accomplishment for me, you know, when I was going through hopelessness and helplessness,
mm-hmm.
and also grieving with my sight loss at the same time. You know, when different things come up in my emotions, they were sort of taking over. You know, there was a lot of fear, a lot of anger and frustration. And when I do tasks or when something comes up,
mm-hmm.
like crossing the street, like finding a place, like traveling, just changing the television channel, right?
Yeah.
But today, blind people are more fortunate. So with Alexa, Google, and things of that nature, I think the blind community are more fortunate now than they were in the past, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't do Braille, but I do audio audio from text to speech or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, that will work for me.
Have you tried Braille?
I tried Braille. Mm-hmm. It seemed like my fingers were too big for the Braille. Mm-hmm. For the Braille, mm-hmm. You know. Then I took a couple classes and I was like,
That's not for me.
That's not for me. You know, I got to move on to something else. You know.
I understand.
And so when I'm doing something, at first, I had to listen to the whole website, right? When I go on a website or when I text or something, when something is read to me, it reads the whole thing to me, right?
Right.
So that was a challenge. You know, a lot of anxiety, a lot of, can you hurry up? And then I'm used to reading and I couldn't comprehend the audio part of the electronic part of the reading part.
Yeah.
At first, right? You know, I had to read it over. I said, you know, what did it say? And then I have the speed was real slow. Mm-hmm. Then after a while, it took me forever to just read a website.
Yeah.
You know, I was frustrated and like, I got to go take a break. I go to a lunch break or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, drink a cup of coffee or something, eat a donut. And so then as I went along, I sped the speed up of the voice on the devices. Like I started off like 25 words per minute. Now I'm up to like 70 words per minute, right? And what happens with that is that I catch phrases of words. I don't catch the whole sentence, mm-hmm. but I learn when I'm reading books, electronic books, or things of that nature, reading documents, writing documents, proofreading on websites, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. I just catch the key phrases of the word. So that works for me now. So it's much easier as I practice. I had to practice this stuff. It didn't just come overnight. A lot of challenges for me, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of sadness. And then also when I completed the task, it was a lot of a joy that, you know, I did that, you know?
Yeah.
And then when I got certified, I got a job working as a CPS. I was facilitating groups in a treatment facility. And that was in 2019. Mm-hmm. So, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
Then that was another thing, you know, I was like,
having to adjust to that and figure out how to even, you know, do things the way that you would normally do, a completely different way, and then facilitating groups now. I'm sure you have to do that virtually at that point.
Yes.
Okay.
Virtually, Dr. McNamara, it was like, now I got something else to do, change now, you know? It's like, it was a fear of that, you know? Then Zoom came along and, oh my God, you know? Okay, now I got to navigate Zoom.
Right.
Got to take training on that. Freeconferencecall.com, you know, navigating mm-hmm. that, send out meetings. Then working with Zoom, doing voiceover, my iPad, my computer is talking to me at the same time the person is talking in the Zoom meeting, right? You know, so I had to get past that. You know, that was a lot of anxiety for me to do all of that. But I stayed in the moment, you know. I didn't try to get too far ahead of myself. And I had to have a lot of patience. And I had to have a lot of support. Another good friend of mine, he passed away. He was a mentor for me for the Blinded Veterans Association. And he joined me up with that organization and sort of introduced me to the VA, which has low vision services for veterans mm-hmm. that are going through blindness, that are dealing with low vision. What the VA does, the VA gives you mobility training. Also, they give you iPhones, they give you computers, iPads, wearable technology, like the Orcam. They give you things like the Patriot. They're like electronic magnifiers, electronic binoculars for different things, for different people with different types of sight loss.
And just to be clear, you don't have to, or you didn't have to had lost your vision while you were serving, correct?
No, I didn't lose my vision while I was serving.
Okay. Yeah, but if anyone wanted to access any of those services, they can access it. Okay.
Yes, you don't have to. Only thing you required to do, you had to be eligible for VA medical services.
Okay.
And have low vision, which is acuities of 20/60, with corrective visions in your eyes, you know, so
okay.
you're eligible for those services, and you have to be honorably discharged to get services through the VA. That's how that works.
Okay.
Yes. And then they also have a blind rehab training center all over the United States. So I went to Birmingham for that and took some more training. I got my computer, I got a laptop. They gave me training on JAWS, which is Job Application with Speech. It's used with the Dell's computer, used like with Microsoft Office and mm-hmm. things of that nature. It helps you navigate those softwares. So I learned how to do that. And I learned about different things as for traveling as a blind person, traveling through the airport. You know, that was a fear, you know, not be able to see the gates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll tell me, say, hey, you go to the accessibility and tell them you're blind and they'll put you in a wheelchair, right? Or if you're traveling with somebody, then they could push you through the airport. But I couldn't see what gate I was at, what plane leaves here, what planes leave there. That was a lot of anxiety. And then I'm sitting there at the airport and I'm like 2 hours and a half before the plane leaves for my destination, you know? And like, then they like come and get you because they got a lot of people that need those services. And it was very good. So I took a lot of training to help me with my wellness, right? You know, trauma-informed care, whole health wellness. You know, there are six areas of wellness, and they are like physical, emotional, spiritual, occupational, social, intellectual. I think that's six.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn about all these areas of wellness because not only with my physical part of my blindness, I had to work on my mental health and also my emotional part of my blindness also. So that was a big part for me too, just to realize that, you know, I'm not being a less than, I'm not being able to, well, I'm blind, I can't do it, or putting blindness before Dennis, you know. And at first I put blindness before that, you know, because of my grief that I was going through, because every task, or like for instance, sort of dressing myself, you know, I had to dress myself, and sometimes with glaucoma, I have a color blindness. Sometimes I can't tell black from blue or green.
Mm.
So sometimes I have to ask people to do that, you know. So a lot of times I've had my shirt on backwards or things of that nature. Mm. I just laugh at myself.
Was that something that someone had to point out to you?
Yeah, they pointed out to me.
Okay.
they pointed out to me, right? I said, okay. I said, well, I'm sorry, you know. I said, I didn't know, you know, I had two shoes that were similar, right? You know,
uh-huh. And,
you know, stuff like that, you know. It's, but now I find it sort of amusing now.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't amusing at first.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in a place where a guy told me one time I was traveling on the train, I think. He said, you got some nice vest you got on there. He said, but you got it on backwards, right? I said, oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had been traveling for a while, too, with it on backwards, right?
Yeah.
My shirt on backwards and everything like that, right? Mm-hmm. Sweat on backwards. And people tell me, they say, get your sweat on backwards. You know, I had to, you know, the polo guy, he was on the back, you know.
Uh-huh. So, that's the style. That's just the style.
Yeah. They say, you got the new style. You know, brought it back, right?
Right.
So, you know, doing that, you know, it was, you know, what I tell people now is that at least have five supporters.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that choice, some people don't have anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But at least have five people's. Like I tell my wife, like I don't tell her to do everything. She doesn't really quite understand my blindness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she expects me as Dennis, right? You know, it's like, and sometimes she'll overload me, right? I have some usable vision, and you know, I have to carry a white cane around. Mm-hmm. I had to carry a backpack around or whatever. So my hands are sort of full, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm walking or when I'm traveling or if I'm getting something to eat or whatever, I need my cane or whatever in one hand. I got to have my plate, my glass and all of this stuff, you know.
In another hand.
In another hand, I had trained as a server. I know how to carry stuff, right?
Yeah.
As a server when I was working in the food industry.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that's not a problem. I've learned to prepare beforehand before I do something now, you mm-hmm. know. But before then, I was like loosey-goosey. That was hard trying to get people to understand my blindness and not to go into a lot of detail, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, just to be sort of simplified mm-hmm. with my blindness, because mm-hmm. I can go long on and on, you know. And I was like, "You're blind." I said, "Yeah, I have some sight issues and stuff like that. I have a legal blindness." And I can't read print or whatever, and I have blurred vision.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of gives me anxiety sometimes too.
Yeah.
Just describing what my vision is and what it looks like to everybody. Sometimes a lot of people, I'm going here and going there with family members at the same time. But they sort of embraced it now,
mm-hmm.
but not at first. They didn't really know how to help me, but they learned over the years. And my friends learned over the years how to help me
mm-hmm.
because of the tools that I got
mm-hmm.
and the tools that I had training on to educate myself with. You know, when I go somewhere, like if I go to a Hawks game, right, I can't really see the floor or whatever. I can see the floor, but I can't see like the ball shooting in the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I go to a game, I go to the box office and tell them to give me accessible seats,
mm-hmm.
you know, where I got a wheelchair, I ain't got to go climb the stairs
right.
or things of that nature, you
right.
know. And I tell somebody to come pick me back up. Just navigating a whole venue of 17,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of traumatizing too. People,
right.
they don't know what a cane is and they'll run all over you. And one time I went to, with my wife, I went out to Los Angeles. I went to Disneyland and... You know, I had my cane and I didn't have a scooter or nothing like that. Nobody pushed me around. But I had my cane. I was navigating Disneyland, you know, and my in-laws, my sister-in-laws, my brother-in-laws, and all everybody was like, "Oh, we had a good time with you, you know, with your cane and stuff like that." You know,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't trying to navigate in and out of people because it gives you like sort of unbalanced, you'll fall or you'll trip or you'll mm-hmm. hurt yourself or you'll hurt somebody. So I just use go in a straight line when I have a cane when I'm in a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people be jumping over my cane or I might run over little kids or run over some luggage or something or run over a bench or something
yeah.
like that. You know, if it's real crowded,
yeah.
I didn't see that bench or whatever because of my depth perception.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm looking straight, then I don't see what's down below,
mm-hmm.
you know, things of that nature. So... You know, it's an adventure sometimes, blindness, and
yeah.
I've learned to embrace the adventure
yeah.
That I'm going through. They tell me that there's no cure for glaucoma right now, you know, so
mm-hmm.
I say, okay, well, I got a cure. I just use the tools that I got and just keep it moving.
Yeah.
So I got a cure already. I got people with me.
A sense of humor.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I got a group of people. For instance, I got a partner. He likes to go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll go shopping with me or whatever. I got another partner that likes to go to the baseball games or whatever like that. You know, I go with him with that. You know, so I know my wife, she don't like to go to baseball games and stuff like that, you know, but she'll go shopping with me.
Mm-hmm.
But when she's not available, I got friends that I could call to support me, and they know that I have limits to what I can see. I can't drive anymore, so that was a big thing right there when they said, you can't drive anymore, but
mm-hmm.
I was hard-hitting in that, you know, and I really sort of traumatized myself riding on 285, and I couldn't see.
Mm.
And I never did it again. I was riding around 285 in circles, and I couldn't get off the exit. It was raining, it was dark, and I was like, oh, man.
That was a certain level of independence and control that you didn't want to
give up.
Relinquish. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
But now, what I do now, what I say now, I don't want to drive in Atlanta traffic. You know, so I look at a positive.
I
look at a positive, Dr. McAvoy.
Right.
I look at a positive for that now. You know, I was like, I ain't got to drive in Atlanta traffic. You know,
right?
And
that's definitely something to be happy about. So with that, I know trust is a huge thing, and when you you know, you've lost your sight now, and then having individuals who are around you that can't quite understand what you're dealing with or what you're going through, and then part of that shutting down and dealing with mental health issues. How did you navigate trust, you know, trusting people again, trusting yourself even to do some things?
Well, first of all, I found out that I was the one that needed help.
Hmm.
You know, it was my personal responsibility to navigate life, and trusting people. I have a certain network of people that I can trust. I don't say I trust everyone, but I have a group of people in the support group that I trust, and a group of people, relatives that I trust,
mm-hmm.
To help and assist me and to guide me and support me in my life. That's what I did. It took time to do that because there was a fear of getting close to people.
Mm.
I would say, you know, being vulnerable.
Yeah.
As a man, right? You know, they say like a man's not supposed to cry, right? And that was a myth for me, right? And I cried for joy, for sadness, or whatever, you know, and all this in between. You know, sometimes we have emotions of loss and in different areas. Sometimes I don't feel it's necessary for people to help me when I say, like for instance, I tell my wife sometimes, right? She's like, I want to take you here, I want to take you there. I said, well, you know, I live in the city of Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I tell her that, right? I said, I can navigate my way around the city. And I also took a self-defense training class
mm-hmm.
for people with blindness. Also, I train people in self-defense, you know, also. So being safe and trusting people and knowing what to do and where to be in certain situations, you know,
mm-hmm.
that fear sometimes of the unseen, what I can't see, especially at dark, right? I don't really go out at dark. I try to do whatever I can before dark or whatever. It's from here to there. I'm trying to be in a safe environment. And I trust my instincts. I trust my sensitivity skills. I trust my hearing. I trust my sense of where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
I trust my sense of smell, my sense of touch, because it's my personal responsibility for me to be safe.
Now, have you been in an uncomfortable situation with a stranger where you might have actually felt, you know, that you were being taken advantage of in any kind of way?
I can't say I have. One time I was walking downtown at the train station, and I had my cane. I was walking in a straight line. And, you know, people come up. I have some usual vision, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people say, you ain't blind. You ain't blind. You can see. They say, you can see me. They say, you ain't blind. Why you get that cane? But, you know, I don't answer to that question sometimes.
Yeah.
And to be in uncomfortable situations. And this person, they didn't want to get out the way, right? You know, they was like, wanted to fight, right?
Mm.
And I was like, oh, my God, you know. Then, you know what I did? I had gone through training. What I did was I raised my hand and I had my hands open.
Mm-hmm.
I say, I don't want to do no harm to you like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had my hands up with my palms facing them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have my hands balled up like I wanted to fight.
Yeah.
I had my hands open
mm-hmm.
to say, I mean no harm
mm-hmm.
to them.
Yeah.
So they sort of went on about their way, you know, or whatever, you know, but that was about the only uncomfortable situations that I have
mm-hmm.
with people when I'm traveling around about in the city, in the community. you know, which I have some usual vision, but instead of me trying to explain what my blindness is, they don't really understand. Some people think blindness is just like I was. When I first knew that I was blind, right, I only knew like Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know there was like an in-between, right?
Right.
You know, until I started going to support groups, went for the Center for Vision Impaired, and also I went to the VA, to the Low Vision Clinic. I seen other people and joined the Blind and Veterans Association. Uh-huh. I didn't know other people had other diseases besides the one that I had. And then I said, I'm in the right place.
Hmm.
Because I didn't know nobody that was blind.
Yeah.
At first, you know?
And that's the idea, right? You know,
yeah.
Especially when you're not born blind, right? You mm-hmm. have this perception of what things look like. And so if you look differently, which is unfortunately why those who are sighted, right, they'll see you and say, you can't be blind. It's no way. You know, you're not wearing the shades. You're not feeling around in the dark right now. You have your cane. I see you walking from here to here. You're not blind. Do you find that that happens more often than not, that people, their own biases, they place on you and that in turn, you know, puts limitations on you in that particular environment?
Yes, it does. Stigma of what a blind person looks like, mm-hmm. like you were saying about the shades and about the cane and about, you know, feeling around.
Right.
That's what they know. They haven't been educated on the blind community, you know. And for me, I try to advocate for the blind community, advocate for myself, to let people know that in corporate world, in the government world, that it's more prevalent now, that they are more aware, that they got more people now
mm-hmm.
in the community for these things, to let people know that about blindness, like how to navigate a park as a blind person, right?
Right.
You know, they have studies on that, right? So Georgia Tech, Georgia State students, they do focus groups on things of that nature. They come to blind centers and ask people questions about those things. But I found it overall in the general population that people are not educated about blindness.
Yeah.
Most of the time that I go to a restaurant, there's no large print
mm-hmm.
menu. There's no braille menu.
Right.
Sometimes, some restaurants, if you ask, because I've been there where they had a large print menu and it was like humongous, right?
Yeah.
I was like, okay. I think it was...
Need two people to hold it.
Yeah, need two people to hold it. It was like the Cheesecake Factory, I think. I'm just going to name a name. But they had a large
with
print.
With 20 pages.
Yeah, it was 20 pages. I was like, it was a book.
Right.
I said, oh, no. I said, and I was trying to think, like, okay, what do I want to eat? You know, I told the waitress or server, I was like, just give me an idea of what you got.
Surprise me.
Yeah. You know, what do you think? What do you like?
Yeah.
And stuff like that, right? But I found it. But over the general population, that they're not very educated, hotels,
mm-hmm.
things of that nature, mm-hmm. I would say. They're getting better. The corporate venues now, websites,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are not accessible for people with blindness, you know, with the tools, the software that we use, you know. So we had to go before Congress, even some of the federal government websites are not accessible, or what they call 508 compliance, right? It's still a battle, it's still a process, it's still a growing process, mm-hmm. you know. Everybody's not gonna get it, all my family members don't get it. And then sometimes you can tell people over and over and over and over again,
they still won't get it,
right? You know, I said, I can't see that, right? I was like, where are you at? You know, they're like, oh, you can see.
Right.
They'll tell me that, right? You know, I just smiled to myself, you know, I said, yeah, that's the only you know, right?
A lot of things like that is only a problem when it affects that person, right? It's
yeah.
like you get a new car or a new shirt and all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere, right? Or,
yeah.
you know, everyone has it now. So it's one of those things where until it's close to you, until it's something that you are dealing with or someone closer to you that's dealing with it, you're not going to, one, see it in general, but you're not going to notice that there's a problem, that there's a need to be, filled. So my question to you is, how do you think we can get this information out, have people educated on blindness and how to navigate or work with or around individuals who suffer from blindness and make things more accessible?
Well, first of all, I would think we have every September, you have White Cane Safety Day mm-hmm. in the communities across the United States, some America. That's a great tool. What we do, we invite out the community and we put blindfold on people to play games blindfolded mm-hmm. to see what it's like for people to blind. Like we went over to Georgia Tech. We went over to Georgia Tech a couple of times over there and we walked around the community with our canes over in Midtown. Mm-hmm. And also we went down to the Capitol because they had a thing going on about blind people not being able to take care of their children.
Hmm.
You know,
wow.
So they was trying to implement that into a law or some kind of stuff like that. That was before the pandemic. And so we went out to the Capitol and advocated for people that were parents, that had children, that raised children blind, mm-hmm. single parents, no blind couples. That yeah. were blind, that had children, that never seen their faces, right? They couldn't see their faces, And also advocating and going out to, I would say, doing events at Lowe's or doing events at a Walmart or something like that, doing a giveaway and things of that nature to let the community be aware, because you got a lot of people. The more people you see, and the more people that's in the community, for instance, a Lowe's or a Walmart, mm-hmm. Everybody goes to Wadi World, right?
Right.
So maybe not so much now, I don't know, but having some events at those places to do fundraisers or something like
raise
that.
Raise awareness, yeah.
Let the community be aware mm-hmm. that people with blindness, that we're in this community, that we spend money at these places, that I shop at these places. Mm-hmm. Going to the county commissioners, city commissioners, and mayor in your city mm. and having them write up a proclamation to the community and let all the commissioners and county commissioners like we do now, this is what we do, and also have it access in hospitals also, because a lot of times you go to hospitals, they don't really know how to access services for people that are blind, right? Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I went to a new place today, one of the places, and I think I'm about the first person to blindness. They didn't know how to deal with me, right? I told them that they wanted to give me a bunch of paper, right? I said, well, I really prefer an email or a text mm-hmm. because paper, I don't like paper. Just if it's money now, I'm good. I'm good. But a lot of paper, I can't recognize it, and it'll take me too long to file the system.
Yeah.
It'll create a lot of clutter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this? I had to look at it, had to pull my magnifier out or whatever like mm-hmm. that. But going to those communities and let the director know what they can do for people. Like when I go to the VA, they sort of a little bit better than most corporate public hospitals,
mm-hmm.
being more sensitive toward people with blindness.
Yeah.
Maybe be at the park or something, have an event or some kind of a cookout
mm-hmm.
at the parks or one park or something like that,
Yeah.
Or just have or be in a race, like the 4th of July race. We have a couple of blinded people that walk and run in the 4th of July marathon here. I mean, mm-hmm. A 10K.
Yeah.
Here. To just be out in the community, just be everywhere, And also to the banks and all of these people, right, that they have these apps and on their websites and they're not accessible for people with blindness. So write them a letter or write them an email and things of that nature. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You know, so it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of places.
Absolutely.
But you need
advocates.
Need people are willing to do all this, you know. And,
yeah.
And a lot of people that I know, they have a lot of fear. They're not able to get out. Then they have transportation issues.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And things of that nature.
Well, great. Now, if you grew up anything like I grew up, you know, mental health was a buzzword, right? So it was, right, we don't talk about it. You know, we dealt with things in silence. And especially in the Black community, growing up in a Black male in that community, when it came to mental health, you know, you're not allowed to have feelings, right? You know, you're not allowed to go through depression or have anxiety. That's not what men do. And so obviously growing up and realizing that you need this because you were going through this, what was it like growing up for you and hearing about mental health? And how did your outlook on mental health and seeking mental health services changed as you got older and once you started to experience blindness?
Okay, first of all, growing up in Southwest Georgia, mm-hmm. dealing with mental health, I say this word, crazy, right?
Right.
Crazy. I was born in the 50s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And through the 70s and in the 80s and stuff like that, more in the 90s, mental health became more prevalent as a disease. As I grew older, I guess coming into the 2000s, I had some issues going on with mental health, you know, facing a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression and things were going on, you know, and when I started losing my sight, you know, it was like, oh, I got to do something, you know, because I was hopeless, you know, and I didn't want to go anywhere. I was like in this dark place and I wasn't active. I didn't want to be around crowds. I didn't want to be around people. I dreaded going out because I couldn't see clearly. I didn't understand that I was in a society that didn't understand that I was blind. I found out that in recovery, I started drinking and doing drugs. And, you know, that really taught me in a dark place. So I sort of lost control of myself, you know, really being human, you know, and I just didn't care anymore about myself or nothing around me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and finally in 2014, I got in some trouble and, when I got locked up, this veteran, he told me about the Veterans Treatment Court in Fulton County. So when I went there and they had people dealing with addictions and dealing with mental health, I met other people that was going through the same thing I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I met one blind person that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned from them. They told me that it was catching automobile. They was coming there. Then I told the counselor. And she said, yeah, we got one blind person that's come here already, right? So I didn't know how to access the lesson plan and stuff like that. So they had to make different rules and different ways that I could be successful at being in recovery and completing this treatment program.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, man, I learned that I had a disease that I could be in recovery with, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was treatable. So I knew the things that I was going through because the way my life was going, that I had an issue with mental health. And so when I went through the training, you know, it opened my eyes up to different platforms of wellness for me, that it wasn't a cookie cutter thing, right? It was a lot of unity in the mental health field, but it's not uniformly. There are different ways, you know, you have different other programs that can help you get to where you need to be.
Did you see a therapist?
I seen a therapist.
Okay.
Once a week.
Okay.
I seen a therapist once a week. And also we took, we did mindful meditation.
Mm-hmm.
She helped me get in tune with me and my surroundings, right? And just said being quiet and listening to my heart, listening to what's happening around me.
So what advice would you give someone who needs therapy but might be contemplating based on upbringing or based on the stigma around mental health and needing mental health services?
Well, first of all, I would say just sit back and reflect on your life, see where it's going, and look at the part that you are playing in your life and where you're at. We have no control of other people, places, or things. We can't go back into the past. We don't have a time machine.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go into the future. We don't have a time machine. What we can do, we can remain in the present. In my recovery process, I try to stay in the present. Whatever task that's upon me, I try to maintain in my presence. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm facing any anxiety, if my wife is frustrating me, or my grandchildren are frustrating me, or friends are frustrating me, or somebody at work is frustrating me, just take a moment and find out, why am I doing this? Why is I'm letting this person get into my head? It's renting room in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got other things I need to do mm-hmm. besides letting that person rent room in my head. Just like, I can't control other people. You know, people gonna like me or they dislike me. I said, okay, that's fine, you know. But I like Dennis. You know, I like Dennis, and sometimes people give me suggestions. Some people try to tell you what to do. I'm not that one to tell people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just giving you suggestions that this might work for you. If you got a situation, you got a problem, you might want to look at this or look at that. Or just take time and just relax. And what makes you feel good? You know, is it doing music? Is it fixing on a car? Is it singing? Is it dancing?
Yeah.
Is it going to the movies? Just take time out for yourself. Just one day, just don't do anything. Just take your mental health day
mm-hmm.
and do nothing. You know what I'm saying?
That's good. Well, I'd like for you to share with our listeners something exciting that you've done that you never thought that you'd be able to do.
Oh, yeah. First of all, I was talking earlier about kayaking in the Keys.
Mm.
And I can't swim, but I got past that fear. I was in Key Largo down in Florida for a week. And we was in the mangroves, right? They have this plant that's on the coast in the Keys that protects the land from hurricanes and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we was navigating the channels. We had a guide. I was in a kayak by myself, and I never been in a rowboat or whatever. I never been in a kayak, but I had a fear, like, you know, alligators and all this stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I was like, man, I got some alligators down in the Keys and stuff like that, right? You know, so I never thought I would be able to do that, you know? That was exciting. And I remember also, I went to Birmingham and I went to Talladega, and I was in this Corvette. This Corvette Club had a rally or something at Talladega, and I rode around Talladega racetrack in a Corvette, right, with another guy, mm-hmm. and I was so amazed. I say, how do these guys go around this track, three cars right next to each other, riding 150 miles an hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
They right next to each other, right? You know, and so. That experience right there, too, was a great experience, you know, just being on that racetrack, you know, the Talladega racetrack. I had seen that movie Talladega Nights and stuff like that. So I actually was in Talladega, and also I did a lot of things blind. I thought I'd never do self-defense certification, learn how to defend myself as a blind person, learning that part of self-defense,
mm-hmm.
and then getting certified, you know, learning about safety, things of that nature, you know. It was like, learn how to, when the person gets you down, how you can just easily slide up on that person. The person gets you in a headlock or a full Nelson, you can easily slide out of it. You know, it was so amazing. I said, man, I didn't know I could do all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
You amazed yourself.
Yeah, amazed myself, yeah.
That's so,
in adaptive sports, and I've been in walking 3K walks and stuff like that, you know, as a blind person, you know, just navigating that, you know, being active.
Yeah.
Doing things like that, yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Well, if anyone is looking to join a self-defense class or one of your small groups that you facilitate, how can they reach you? And please give them information on the Blind Veterans Association as well.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, my number is 404-645-9839. My email is dennisdarns56@gmail.com. It's all lowercase. That's DENNISDARNES 56@gmail.com. You can shoot me an email. Text me. First, don't call me, but just text me, please, or leave a voicemail, and I'll call you back, and I'll give you information on the Men's Blind Support Group and Adjustment to Vision Loss Groups. And also, if you're a veteran, you're the BVA.org website. It's BBA.org. You can look at that website. You can find more about the Blind and Veterans Association, or you can call me and I can direct you to the Atlanta chapter. We have four chapters in Georgia, in Atlanta, Augusta, Columbus, and Central Georgia, which includes Dublin, Millersville, Macon, part of Valdosta, going back south. We don't have a southern group yet, or we don't have one in Savannah, but we're trying to get one. But if you're in those areas and you need some help how to navigate life, or if you're going through something, you need support, or you need to talk to somebody, you can call me and I can direct you, and I can send you to somebody else that can be able to help you. So again, my name is Dennis Starnes. My number is 404-645-9839. And my email is dennisstarnes56@gmail.com. That's all lowercase, DENNISDARNES56@gmail.com. And I'll be glad to assist you if I can in whatever you might need or going through, from resources or things of that nature.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on our show, Eyes and Lows, today. It was so great learning more about you. And really, you're such an inspiration for many people, not just blinded veterans, not just blind people. You know, you definitely show that no matter what it is that you're dealing with, you can get past it. It is not who you are. It is just something that you're dealing with. So we're so grateful that you came and shared your story. And, you know, just shedding a light on mental health in the blind and low vision community, and just inspiring others to continue to live their lives the way that they want to. Sky is the limit. And so thank you very much. I am your host, Dr. Brittany McLemore, with the Georgia Radio Reading Service. If you're looking to hear this podcast and our other podcasts, you can listen to us on anywhere podcasts are streaming. You can also listen to us on our website at GARRS.org. That's GARRS.org. Thank you for tuning in to Eyes and Lows.